Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Jess Walter, the New York Times bestselling author of Beautiful Ruins and The Cold Millions, returns with the new novel So Far Gone, centering on Reese Kinnock, a retired environmental reporter and former journalist who retreats into a self-imposed exile 7 years ago after a holiday altercation with his conspiracy theory-obsessed son-in-law. Reese dumped his smartphone, abandoned his job and family, and goes off the grid. But Reese's quiet existence is shattered when his grandchildren arrive at his doorstep. His daughter is missing, a dangerous militia is pursuing the children, and Reese is thrust back into a fractured America of radical beliefs and disrupted families. Jess Walter is the author of seven previous novels, including the National Book Award finalist The Zero, and Citizen Vince, winner of the Edgar Award, in addition to the aforementioned Beautiful Ruins and The Cold Millions. The new book, So Far Gone, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jess Walter to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. It's good to be here.
What brought you down this particular path? Of course, Spokane, Washington, and that region is your home, and it's the home to several of your books, and I'm curious as to what it was to think of this character, Reese Kinnock, and put him in such a situation.
Yeah, I suppose there are a lot of sort of semi-biographical details that chipped in. I was a former journalist like him. The first book that I wrote was about Ruby Ridge in 1995, 30 years ago. And so watching the way the sort of fringe theories and conspiracies that motivated the far right then have metastasized and become part of the mainstream. But really, I think the main impulse was that idea of just turning away from the news and how the dread that I think so many people feel. I saw this New Yorker cartoon. It's a car speeding down a highway toward a thing that says "Can't look away," and then there's this this off ramp that reads "Had enough," and I felt like a lot of people, I just wanted to turn away from the news in 2023 and 2024 as we sort of lurched back toward where we were in 2016. And so I started with just that premise. What if a guy had thrown his cell phone out the car window and moved off the grid in 2016 and now has to emerge into the world to find out not only are we not in a better place than we were, but we might be worse off. And that was really the beginning point, that sort of daydream of throwing your smartphone out a car window and moving off the grid.
What I thought was interesting, assuming this was obviously written before the election, but I mean, since Inauguration Day, so many people have said, I tune in, I can't take it anymore. I'm backing out for a little while. I'll be back. But and in public radio, we see this all the time. Our numbers are just, it's like a roller coaster because yeah. People are in, they check in, and then they check out. So you understand what it is about people that they want to do that. Obviously, this is taking it a bit further and just cutting the ties.
Yeah, I wanted to write the most heightened version of that checking out. I think a lot of us have. And for a lot of us, it's healthy. I mean, there were, and this maybe was partly for me in 2023 and 2024, I can be a little bit of a political junkie. So I'm crunching the numbers, you know, what's this precinct in Iowa tell us? However the election turned out, I knew we weren't done with this period in history. There was a point when I told my agent and my editor, I sure hope this reads more like historical fiction than contemporary fiction when it comes out. Instead, it's the moment we still live in. And the other thing that I thought hadn't really been tackled in fiction is, I think this is probably not since the 1960s have families been torn apart, friendships rended because of beliefs. We've started to define each other by these terms. You know, you're red, you're blue, you're progressive, you're conservative, you're nationalist. And when we sort of dehumanize that way, it's really hard then to come back together. And so I wanted to look at that issue. And I wanted to do it the way I tend to write fiction, which is in a way that's both comic and hopefully filled with pathos and feeling.
Well, it certainly is a comic, and a lot of really good laughs in this. I have to say, the fact though that you write about politics really without writing about politics, because you're writing about these characters, is really fascinating. It's an interesting approach.
Well, I don't think we can pretend politics doesn't affect our lives anymore. You know, the inciting incident in this novel is really a fight that Rhys Kinnock has with his son-in-law, a seeker named Shane, who's sort of found his way to AM talk radio. And then that has led to sort of a Christian nationalism that's starting to brew in him, that then leads to a whole raft of conspiracy theories. And they're watching football. And this actually came out of an experience I had where I was watching football with a group of friends, and they started in on these conspiracy theories about how the NFL was rigged. And we're at a time now where, one fifth of Americans believe that microchips were implanted in them because of the COVID vaccine. 30% believe the US government was behind 9/11. 30% believe that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States. We're at a place now where such a significant percentage of Americans believe in some conspiracy theory. And to me, the most alarming one is that 40% of all Americans, left or right, believe that no matter who's in charge, there's ac actually a secret shadowy force running the government. We have destabilized and our institutions so completely, and we've broken down the media. More than half of Americans get their quote unquote news from social media. And so into that void has come this whole raft of conspiracy theories. And so I don't think it's really politics we're talking about. It's these larger social cultural things that I wanted to sort of tap into. And, my family, there are people who all of a sudden we don't talk to anymore because
Right.
they've voted for someone else. And to me, that's kind of heartbreaking. And I wanted to sort of dive into that, into that idea and with these characters and try to see if it's possible for them to re reconcile and for us to maybe see a way forward.
It is fascinating just to go one step further in this, but when you're writing about white Christian nationalists, for example, these become real characters. They're not caricatures. You're not looking to paint them in a way that we would expect them to be painted. And the same way with Reese. We understand where Reese is coming from. We understand where the Christian nationalists are coming from.
Every person, let's say you're on the left end of the political spectrum, probably right now you feel as if you're disconnected from the government. You don't trust what's happening. You maybe want to turn away, and you may even feel apocalyptic, like the world's coming to an end. Now ask yourself how the people on the far right felt 10 years ago, and you've just sort of described it. And that, to me, was the realization with Rhys Kinnock, that his pulling away and barricading himself away from the world is very similar to the thing that Shane is doing. The book starts with Kinnock's rant about the world and about these characters, that celebrity entertainment has bled into government and cable TV has eroded newspapers, and we've fallen into this huge internet-sized black hole of bad ideas, bald-faced lies and BS until the worst person in America gets elected president. And that rant was sort of where I was starting from. But the thing that I realized was how much more a character like Rhys Kinnock has in common with the very people that he is sort of demonizing. And I think that's the real flaw that we have is, not seeing people as people. And so, I don't think the book necessarily asks you to sympathize with, a Christian nationalist so much as understand where they're coming from. And to me, that's the real danger. We've gotten to a place where we can't even really imagine what the other side's thinking. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
Shane is the son-in-law
Right.
and the one who gets into an altercation with Reese at a Thanksgiving dinner, and the next thing ends up being punched in the mouth. As we see it through the novel, as the novel progresses, that we realize really that both these characters are lost in different ways. There is a searching that's going on for both of them.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a very common place that we find ourselves. And in my mind, I tend to take a longer view of things. And I do think this period will pass. I think it'll pass in a painful way. It already is for so many people. There are so many outrageous things already happening, but it will pass, and we will need to sit down at dinner tables together again. And understanding the commonalities for me was a big part of the book. But again, without, there's also violence in the book. There's also the deep threat of what I think, especially, the sort of macho, gun-driven Christian nationalism that we see in the militia group that Shane is flirting with. I did not at all want to soft pedal the dangers, but to get to the underneath to these characters and what draws them into the what causes them to turn away from reality. And that's what I really think we have. Those books in the 1960s talked about the generation gap, and I feel like we have a reality gap. We are getting entirely different sets of information and then forming our beliefs based on totally different ideas of the world.
I was going to ask you about the violence because it's one thing to be punched in the mouth, obviously, which is a violent act. But when the guns start coming out, and a lot of guns,
There are a few guns in the book, yeah.
it's a different thing, right? I mean, it's a takeover, it's a protection, it's a look at that culture of guns, which is different than a personal violent moment in a household.
Yeah, it's, I live in the West. The house, the very house that Kinnock seeks refuge in, which is a cinder block house with no electricity and no running water, is the house that I lived in the 1970s with my parents for a few years. So it's in the very same place and it's still standing there. But growing up in the West and growing up, in the country as I did in a very remote house with a cattle rancher grandfather, guns were tools that just were around. And it was a question I asked myself in the novel, which was, how far am I going to go in portraying the potential for violence? And as I said, I don't think it made any sense to look away from that and to imagine that these are all just quirky characters, with their own motivations. This is a there's some danger, there's some real danger here, and people will be hurt. And so I felt like, besides the entertainment value of a gunfight with a white nationalist who's afraid the tire on his pickup is going to get shot out, and he's going to have to replace one tire, and they won't wear evenly. That's his big concern. Alongside that sort of comical idea, there's a real threat from the fact that we have all of these elements coming together in a society that already has way too many guns.
One of the elements is kids, two kids, and two kids who are brought into the story and are real kids. I mean, they sound like real kids, they seem like real kids, and they're smart.
So Reese's grandchildren, 13-year-old Leah and 9-year-old Asher, show up on his front porch, and that's what really shakes him out of this desire to escape and makes him realize he needs to reemerge in the world and protect his family. And in creating those kids, their dad wasn't always as extreme as he is now. They've gone to school. They're really bright, precocious, interesting children. Their mother, Bethany, who is Reese's daughter and has gone missing, has raised them in a world of books, and they don't have electronics. And I may be tipping my hat that one of the real dangers I see in the world is kids with smartphones instead of books, because these are kids who read and understand the world. And it was so fun to write them. And Asher is my favorite kind of character, which is a wannabe prodigy. All he wants is to be better than he is at everything. If there's any autobiographical character in the novel, it really is poor Asher, who wants to be the best chess player in the world, but probably will never be so.
And that's something that both his sister and even his mother will say, yeah, he wants to be, but he's not really that great.
And those characters were really fun to write. And Leah, who has this, at 13, one of the threats of the book is when Reese finds out that his daughter has been, quote unquote, betrothed to the 19-year-old son of the pastor. And so immediately he realizes the threat and the danger of this new church that Shane, his son-in-law, has gotten involved in, and that Shane belongs to the men's group at this church, which is called the Army of the Lord, and drives around with guns, baby Bjorn to their chest, protecting malls that don't ask for help. And so, Reese has disappeared in 2016 and reemerged in 2024 to find that his family is in this precarious place. And Leah herself was someone who, again, I imagine that even though having one of her parents drifting out onto the edge like this and having her mother depressed and trying to find a way out of maybe a tough relationship, she has this really unique way of seeing the world, colors that she describes in really magical ways. And it probably goes to my belief that children are so resilient and carry within them such innate strengths and powers that I had so much fun creating those two characters.
And even though it's been so long since Reese has seen his grandchildren, he sees his daughter and Leah almost immediately.
I think it's the shock. So again, this is all on page one, so I'm not giving anything away, but he's two kids are on his doorstep. He's looking through a screen, a dirty screen door, so he doesn't quite recognize them. They're with a woman he doesn't know. He hasn't seen them in 3 years. And so for just a moment, 3.5 years, for just a moment, he doesn't recognize them. And I needed something that would totally shake him out of the world. But when he does recognize them, he's not only seeing his granddaughter, he's seeing in Leah, his daughter Bethany, at the moment he was probably the closest to his own daughter. And that shock, I think, is what breaks him out of his, not just his malaise and his disappointment in the state of the world, but in his own personal failings as a dad, as a husband, as a journalist. And I think it's the other thing you asked about avoiding the didactic and avoiding politics. And the politics always leads to something personal. And I think that's what it leads to with Reese, is this desire to go back and redeem himself as a father and as a human being.
Jess Walter is our guest. The name of the new book is So Far Gone. It is published by Harper. Characters that Reese has written about and situations that he has covered come back because these characters who were perhaps a problem in one stage of the world are a problem now in a different stage of the world.
I think it's happened to every reporter where you bump into someone that you covered. And this is almost the worst case scenario that Reese had covered a poacher, a man who would shoot eagles and then sell their tail feathers and their heads. And there is a thriving black market in eagles. And which I found so ironic when I was doing my research that the national symbol of the United States is being poached and sold online. But this character, Dean, who also is a member of the Army of the Lord, Reese has written a story about him being arrested for poaching eagles. And the headline writer has called him the Dominion Eagle Killer because he claims dominion over animals and tries to use that as his defense. And there are moments of great tension in the book in which maybe through dialogue, I try to, humorously remind people that these are just people, just human beings. When Reese has to say, I don't write the headlines, which every newspaper reporter will have had to say at some point, even in a sports story, so and so drops the ball in big game, and it's like you can write the most nuanced story you want, and on the copy desk someone would put a headline on that would embarrass you. So yeah, that moment happens. And Shane is certainly someone whose interiority I wanted to represent. As a novelist, you have to sort of allow yourself the existence of villain too. And so I was able to create Dean, the eagle killer, as a character who's just a force of darkness in the book.
It's also about how a character ages and
Yeah.
mellows and becomes humble in many ways. And of course, a lot of that's situational, but it there's just a part of the maturation process as well, and being out of it for 7 years.
Yeah, I've always thought that humility is the path back from most of our wrong turns in life, and I think that's a big step for him. The book is a road trip novel. I'm a big fan of Charles Portis, True Grit, and Dog of the South, and Norwood, and like those books, I wanted to write, a sort of wild road trip, and for that you need sidekicks. So I gave Reese several sidekicks, a couple of whom are men like him at a certain time in their lives when the world seems to be done with them. And what we do with that, what especially the crisis in men, as the media pronounces it, what we do with the feeling that we don't belong anymore, or that maybe we're the cause of problems. And that's the world these characters are facing as they barrel along trying to help Reese out of his predicament.
You also seem to ask the question of who your friends are,
Yeah.
of who would you count on, and that it's often hard that we silo ourselves so much sometimes that we don't even know who's around us who is a friend.
And I think that's especially true now. I don't think we quite realize just how isolating the technology of smartphones and internet life has made most of us. We came out of the pandemic having lived in an isolated state. And I think for a lot of people, we're surrounded by people who only believe what we believe. We are estranged from the sorts of social groups that used to connect us. And so I think that's so true of a lot of people. And in building Reese's friendships that he has to kind of rebuild, or the new ones that he makes, there are three real characters, four, I guess. An old friend, Brian, who is a member of the Spokane tribe, and Reese has expressed his love for Brian's wife, common-law wife, Joni. And so he's gotten in trouble with maybe the one good friend he had the last few years. And then his ex, a woman named Lucy, who may be the most profane character that. Her ability to curse is I marveled at even as I was writing her. And then also who gets involved is Lucy's ex, a bipolar retired police detective named Chuck, who was like giving the whole book a shot of adrenaline, putting him in there. And so that the characters that come out that Reese reconnects with, or that he connects with for the first time, are, to me, were a way of showing, him coming back into the world of human connection again.
And even though Bethany has not been off the grid like her father, still has that disconnect and still is rather alone.
I don't tend to write books that work toward lessons, but often the process of writing a book reveals to me something that maybe has been boiling under my own surface, and that was that this disconnection that I think we all feel is really dangerous and
Yeah.
really, really has fractured the culture in a way. And there are so many causes. There are, that it we've been we have as a nation, we've been sort of mourning this polarization, the cruelty that we seem to live in now, the dehumanization of migrants, of all sorts of people. And I think it's hard for me to imagine any solution other than reconnecting at the family level, at the community level. I do think I metaphorically moved to a little house in the woods for a while in late 24 and early 25. And however we do it, we all have to sort of, I think, come out of the woods and reclaim those connections and start to rebuild the fabric that I think has been torn.
And the tearing of that fabric, again, going back to violence, but we don't realize perhaps in the moment of how damaging it can be.
No, I don't think we do, and the damage won't be to the people who deserve it, if anyone deserves it. The damage will be to the poorest and the weakest, and the people, many of the people who've fallen for misinformation, and so It's going to take some work, and for me, the process of writing is often starting down a path and then being surprised at the place it takes me. And I think I was surprised to find Reese and Shane in many ways motivated by the same thing. And so finding a way to imagine what then would bring them back together in the end of the book. And that's what I was writing toward the whole time, you know, and while also hopefully satisfying all the things that I like to do in books that are entertaining, which is, you know, to write with humor and to write suspense in a way that you're wondering what's going to happen, and surprises. You know, we cross a couple borders in this book into places I think we didn't expect to go.
There is a character in this book, it's a minor character, but Jeff is fantastic.
Hefe Jeff, yeah, they. Yeah, so there are really a couple of set pieces in the book. One is the Rampart, which is where the Army of the Lord trains, and they have to cross the Idaho border to get to that place where the children have been taken and where there's real danger. And the other place is a music festival in the woods of British Columbia, where they encounter a real character who takes people on mushroom rides and is a sort of guided tour of every drug you might want to know. And yeah, it, and Hefe Jeff is was again so fun to write. The you know I cr opening the world up to characters like that is a novelist just they become so fun to write that you know you're the trick sometimes can be getting them out of the book. You know, they want more real estate than sometimes you can give them.
The name of the new novel is So Far Gone, and it is published by Harper. Jess Walter, what a pleasure. It's wonderful to speak to you, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this novel as well as your previous work, and it's just a delight to have the opportunity to spend time with you.
Thank you, Joe. You too. It's great.
Again, Jess Walter's new novel is So Far Gone, published by Harper. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter or at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.